This is a test. 1, 2, 3. This is a test. How are we doing? This is a test.
Mental and physical trauma.
No doubt that there will be another accident or nuclear radiation in low and high doses will be released through human error or terrorism or through faulty design of the machines.
Come closer to the truth than government activity permits. Governments, whether democratic or non-democratic, have a tendency to release what they think people ought to know rather than what the facts are. And the fact that we are private and dedicated to being totally objective will, I think, make it possible for us to have data that will be truly useful for science. We are pledging that we will make all information collected available as soon as it has been published and, where possible, even before publishing and peer-reviewed, where it relates purely to factual material, that the monies that may be obtained from whatever source and will be used by various parts of our consortium will in no way suggest control, that our efforts will remain individualistic and objective and will be available for all mankind.
In what you've been able to study so far, what are some of the dangers of low-dose radiation?
Armin, would you like to? Well, I think probably the greatest danger for low-dose radiation at this point is that there is a total lack of real experience and controlled scientific studies to really answer that question. Some of my colleagues from Ukraine and Belarus and Russia are probably best able to help us answer that question. They might like to comment.
Человечество с самого своего рождения находится в контакте с ионизирующей радиацией. Так же, как и контактирует с ультрафиолетом. Все определяется дозой.
Everything is defined by dose.
И нужно узнать.
It's necessary to know.
Что вредно, что безразлично.
What is dangerous and what is not dangerous.
Вот сегодня житель города Москвы.
If, for example, today to live in the city of Moscow.
За жизнь получает около 5-10 рад.
To live in the city of Moscow, you would receive a total lifetime dosage of 50 rad. From 5 to 10.
За счет рентгеноскопии, снимков космического излучения.
For example, from the normal sources, from the cosmos, from normal radiation.
Вредно это или нет?
This is dangerous or not?
Кроме того, из реактора Чернобыльской атомной станции была выброшена вся таблица Менделеева, все химические элементы.
In addition to the Chernobyl radiation,
все химические элементы.
There were other elements from the Mendeleev table present as well.
All the elements from the chemical table Mendeleev was present as a result of that accident.
Мы знаем, что когда они оседают в щитовидной железе, то это очень опасно.
We think that if the radiation is in thyroid, it's very dangerous.
Но есть еще очень много точек, куда они могут осесть, другие элементы. Здесь йод, а другие элементы.
In the thyroid, we're talking about iodine, but if there's other elements, there are many places in the human body where those elements can find a place and, to be there.
И только изучая состояние здоровья населения, мы можем сказать, что опасно, что не опасно.
And only by studying the health condition of the residents of the city, of the people population, human population, we can find out what is dangerous and what is not.
Вот в Израиле у евреев, приехавших из Южного Йемена, в связи с заражением волос, надо было удалить волосы.
For example, the people in Israel from South Yemen, because of the radiation that they received, they have to remove all the hair.
The skin disease,
need depilation. Надо было удалить волос.
Okay, the hair was removed due to the skin disease.
Их обычно удаляют с помощью облучения.
And the hair was removed using the radiation.
И это считалось нормой.
And that was considering as a norm, as a standard procedure.
А вот когда это было изучено на большой группе детей,
but then when this method was studied in a large group of children,
оказалось, что они заболели лейкозом.
It was found out that they all get the leukemia.
Гораздо чаще, чем
The frequency of leukemia was much more frequent, you know, much more higher than in other groups.
Поэтому все надо изучать на больших группах населения.
And that's why everything has to be studied in a large group of people.
Теперь уже никто не будет облучать для того, чтобы удалять волос.
And now nobody will use radiation as a method to remove the hair.
And are studies ongoing now with the people who have been affected by Chernobyl? Are they being studied to find out, you know, perhaps if they have certain health problems?
Вот изучение здоровья этих людей составляет суть работы этого консорциума.
The main goal of this consortium is to study the state health condition of the human population in Chernobyl. What happened in Chernobyl accident?
How many people was that in the campus?
Несколько миллионов.
Several million.
Эти цифры много раз назывались, я просто не помню.
I don't remember the exact numbers because those numbers were always mentioned many times in different places.
Но вообще все человечество поражено.
But actually, I think that all mankind is affected by this accident. It's a very small dose, but it's still affected by.
To what extent have safeguards been improved in the former Soviet Union to ensure that there's no repeat of Chernobyl?
Я прежде всего хотел бы ответить. Можно я буду сидеть, так будет удобнее вам. Нет, я прошу вас переводить. Прежде всего о количестве пострадавших.
First of all, regarding the number of people who were affected by this accident.
Если говорить об Украине, общая численность пострадавших выражается миллионами людей только на Украине.
If we're talking only about Ukraine area, there are millions of people were affected by this radiation just in Ukraine.
Сюда входят такие категории. Это прежде всего лица, которые принимали участие в ликвидации аварии на самой станции. Это работники станции, пожарные и многие другие.
There are several groups of people. belong to this, several categories of people belong to this group. First of all, it's a group of so-called liquidators, the people who help to liquidate the consequences of this accident. The firemen
and... На Україні около 140 тисяч чоловік.
In Ukraine there are about 140 people.
Вторую групу составляють ті жителі...
140,000.
140,000. Вторая группа – это те лица, те жители, которые эвакуированы из 30-километровой зоны, из городов Припять, Чернобыль и всей зоны, и также уехали самостоятельно из окружающих зон района.
The second group, category of people is the residents of area of Chernobyl area, 30 kilometers zone. And those people who have been evacuated or they left voluntarily this area after the accident.
Их около 130 тысяч человек.
It's about 130,000 people.
И наконец, третью группу составляют те лица, которые сейчас живут в загрязненных районах, загрязненных радионуклидами, причем зараженность радионуклидами выражена в разной степени.
And the third group third category of people consists of the people who are still residing in an area which is contaminated by radionuclides in different rate of contamination.
Она выражается, степень загрязнения выражается разными цифрами. Очень пестрая картина и пятнистая картина.
Rate of contamination, it's of radiation contamination, it's a very, very different. It's with lots of variables.
А степень загрязнения может выражаться такими цифрами, если в кюри на квадратный километр.
And if we're talking, we can describe the radiation in curie by square meter.
Kilometer. То эти цифры могут быть от единиц, одна, две кюри.
These numbers could be one or two кюри.
И даже до ста.
Up to
100
curies
на
more
очень ограниченных участках.
In very limited territories.
Количество населения, которое проживает на этих так называемых контролируемых территориях, вот и достигает, составляет основную массу населения, которое мы расцениваем как пострадавшие.
The number of people which living in this contaminated area, that's the major number of the people who were affected by radiation, who are still residing in this area. This majority of them belong to this category.
Если в первые месяцы и даже годы после аварии важнейшим критерием была плотность загрязнения почвы, то сейчас основным критерием принята та ежегодная доза, которую получают жители этих территорий.
If immediately after the accident, the main criteria of radiation was a rate of contamination of the soil in the area. Now, as a main criteria of radiation evaluation is the dose which people receive while living in this area per year.
Причем в соответствии с законами, которые приняты у нас, если эта доза превышает половину, лучше сказать, 50 миллизиверт в год, эти жители этих территорий подлежат отселению обязательному.
And according to the law which exists in our republic, people, residents, residents of the area which received more than 50
миллизиверт
radiation per year, it must be evacuated.
От 10 до 50 миллизиверт, при ежегодной дозе от 10 до 50 миллизиверт, переселение, отселение может быть добровольным, но оно гарантируется.
And if the person receives in a range, radiation in a range between 10 to 50 millisievert per year, then evacuation could be voluntarily, but it's guaranteed.
На этих территориях проводятся обязательные ограничительные и радиозащитные мероприятия.
And there are several preventive and protective measures are taken on those territories.
И, наконец, если дозы составляют менее 10 миллизиверт в год сейчас, то проводятся общие наблюдения на этих территориях.
And if the dose is less than 10 millisievert, the just yearly observation is taking place. Check-up, major check-up. Obligated check-up.
Dr. Howe, is there someone that might be able to sort of address what kinds of treatment is available now, what we hope will be able to do, or how we'll be able to figure out what has happened and what it is we need to treat?
Dr. Krzyzenko was about to address the same issue.
Ah, excellent.
Okay.
Большое спасибо. Я представляю Республику Беларусь, Министерство здравоохранения.
I represent the Republic of Belarus.
Что касается защитных мер,
as relating to preventive measures,
мы действительно после Чернобыльской катастрофы в Беларуси оказались в очень сложном положении.
We found ourselves in a very complex situation after the Chernobyl accident in Belarus.
На территории нашей республики нет атомных станций.
We actually don't have an atomic power station in Belarus.
Однако мы окружены четырьмя атомными станциями, которые находятся на границе с нашей республикой.
However, there are a number of stations on the border of our republic.
Это прежде всего четырьмя, да.
There are four stations on the border of our republic.
Это прежде всего Чернобыльская.
Чернобыль.
Это Игналинская в Литве.
Игналинская.
Это Смоленская.
Литвания, Смоленская.
Да. Станции, которые при аварии, на которых по опыту Чернобыльской аварии мы можем и наше население оказаться в зоне поражения.
All of these put us, our country, into a risk of being in a zone of great danger.
Территория Беларуси 207 тысяч квадратных километров.
We have 280,000 square kilometers.
После Чернобыльской катастрофы 46 тысяч квадратных километров оказались загрязнены.
And after Chernobyl, 46,000 square kilometers were contaminated.
На этой территории проживает 25% населения нашей республики.
25% of the population of our republic lives in this contaminated area.
Это из 10 300 000 человек. 2 100 000 проживает на загрязненной территории свыше 37 килобекерель по радиоактивному цезию. 37 килобекерель.
На квадратный метр.
Окей. 37 повторите, пожалуйста, я точно понял.
На загрязненной территории свыше 37 килобекерелей по радиоактивному цезию 137 проживает 2 100 000 человек в Беларуси.
In an area higher than 38 rads of curies of contamination, we have 100,000 over 100,000 people living.
I'm sorry. 37 kilobecquerel per square meter. It's contamination.
Per square meter, I'm sorry.
Per square meter.
37 kilobecquerels per square meter.
Kilobecquerel.
Kilo.
Kilobecquerel
per square meter.
Per square meter.
One.
Curie per square kilometer.
Поэтому изучение влияния доз радиации после Чернобыльской аварии на здоровье населения для нас очень важно.
For this reason, a study of the effect of this accident on the population is very important to our country.
И мы очень благодарны тому, что во второй день идет вопрос именно о изучении состояния здоровья детей, подростков и остальных жителей, которые проживают на этой территории.
We're grateful for the fact that this support is being given to the study of effect on children, on grown-ups, and on the entire population.
Спасибо.
Thank you.
The information that comes out of this, is it going to be shared with the nuclear power industry in this country?
The information.
It's going to be done to
the information that comes out of this meeting and subsequent activities will be published in scientific literature, peer-reviewed, and certainly, as Admiral Zumwalt indicated, information that is of medical importance will be disseminated as widely and openly as will all information as possible. Anything that bears on preventative measures or identifying populations at risk certainly will be communicated to all concerned and openly.
Are there any preliminary results or preliminary studies that give us an idea? We know what the immediate health effects have been overall, and we're aware of all that. But are there any studies, preliminary studies, that give us any indication to what kind of long
The easy answer to that is that there are some things that have come out, some of which have already appeared in the press, issues of thyroid disease, thyroid malignancy. But most of the information, very honestly, is still being addressed. It's the reason that we feel this meeting is so important. Let me just add one quick thing about the format of this meeting. There are actually two parts, in essence, to what's going on here. One is lectures by experts in the field, and when I talk about the field again, I'm talking about a very broad group of disciplines. And the other, which we certainly feel is extremely important, are what we are calling working groups. The working groups include studies of populations, that is epidemiology, the construction of registries, simply getting a handle, as we've already heard, on what populations received what kind of dose. Probably the most important activity, as you've heard, is the dose estimate itself, trying to reconstruct, trying to get some kind of idea physically, biologically, by techniques that are now available as to what an individual, or that being very difficult, what a population may have received in terms of dose is of the highest priority, and basically most of the other studies have to follow from that sort of activity. The other two activities include what we are calling cell and molecular biology. Many of the techniques that have been learned in cancer research, identifying specific genes that cause cancer, obviously we'd be very interested in looking at the expression of those genes in populations of radiation-exposed individuals. And finally, clinical medicine. And not only does clinical medicine include thinking about malignancies or thyroid disease, but importantly includes behavioral aspects. What are the effects for people that may not have even received high doses or low doses of radiation, but simply the stress related to being concerned about food contamination, soil contamination.
We'll be funding a long-term study of Chernobyl victims.
Well, that again is a question that this group is addressing. We have made some preliminary inquiries to both governmental and private agencies, and with any proposal, we need this proposal in all its parts peer-reviewed. It has to pass muster of doing good science and good medicine, and right now that funding is still in the pending stage. We had a proposal into the Department of Energy and have received an overall favorable peer review, but final decision about that is still pending.
What part will the World Health Organization
play? I would, I guess, refer that to... Right, I was going to say, our expert from the World Health Organization is not with us.
The World Health Organization has undertaken a number of initiatives which they call a program. And the program includes everything from helping establish communication, upgrading computer equipment, providing some support for training, sending scientists to other countries for training. bringing scientists to the other countries for review and training as well. And they have been working on a number of research protocols in the areas very similar in terms of thyroid and epidemiology and leukemia. And one of the real advantages of this meeting is they've come to share with us their protocol and programs so that we can hopefully link our efforts and those in the other countries together with theirs. And they also have one that, when you were asking about specific findings at this point, let me give you an example of one that I had the pleasure of seeing firsthand. There is one aspect being called the neuropsychiatric protocol, which is looking at the effect of the psychological, psychiatric effects on children who were exposed in utero at the time of the accident. This is a very complicated question, obviously, but with the efforts this past year, they actually have begun some very early pilot, if you will, feasibility studies, trying to go out and identify these children and do some preliminary investigations on them. This is very difficult, as you might imagine, but in meeting some of the children themselves, it's apparent that there is a high rate of what they call, I'm going to just say one term that they use is giddiness. I mean, the children themselves describe this as a high, you can see this in talking to them, as well as some concerns which may be called here some stress-related symptoms. But it's very difficult to sort this out, and this is just the beginning. Are they really... Do we really understand how that relates to this population? Because we need a reference population. We need good control groups to study. So it's important to get this is very early, but it's a beginning. And we have...
Dr. Howes, if we could, would Dr. Gatto be able to...
Dr. Epstein had a comment. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'd like to comment on the fact that aside from the importance of the... follow-up and research in population groups that have remained in the countries where they were affected. One of the interesting questions and important questions with a tremendous population movement that's occurring in Europe and other parts is the investigation and follow-up of immigrant populations. About a quarter of the Russian Jews who came to Israel in the last 3 years were potentially exposed to the Chernobyl disaster. And one of the things that we are interested in doing is to try and determine, first of all, to what extent they were exposed to other health effects, and secondly, the possible implications of migration on the health effects of this sort of exposure. I'd like to make a point that somebody asked as to what is anything known about the effects, and it has been stated, I think the major effect of the prednisone we know is in the psychological area. And the questions that are being asked by people who either were exposed or think they were exposed are questions that we need to try and answer. Just as an example, something that came up recently was a young woman who was getting engaged and wanted to get married, and the potential spouse's family wanted to know what are the dangers related to the possible genetic effects on their children. And I think that these sorts of questions, which we don't have answers to at the present moment, are some of the aspects that are most worrying to members of the population who were exposed or feel that they were exposed. And these sorts of studies, both in resident populations and migrant populations, are going to give, we hope, some of the answers, and more important, some of the possible interventions that can be carried out later.
I was going to ask Dr. Howes, it's not by chance that this conference is being held in Houston, and maybe we could let Dr. Gatto describe the connection between Houston and Israel and Belarus and Russia.
Absolutely. Dr. Antonio Gatto is head of medicine and, most importantly, is serving as our host. I'm very happy to introduce him.
Thank you, Dr. Gatto. You may take the podium. There's not a lot of room back there.
Well, the Texas Medical Center and its institutions and the Texas Medical Hadassah Foundation are delighted to be the host of this important symposium. The Texas Medical Hadassah Foundation was founded 2 years ago and undertook as its initial focus, its initial area of interest. A follow-up of the children from Chernobyl who were exposed to radiation. And after discussions and visits with colleagues from the Hadassah Medical Center in Israel, it was obvious that this project involved a lot more than we had anticipated. And I've been astonished at the way that the project has grown and our involvement in it. I like to think that the Texas Medical Hadassah Foundation played a small catalytic role. Obviously, this is a very large, complex international project, and with collaboration with Admiral Zumwalt, colleagues at the Hutchinson Research Center in Washington, from various agencies of the government, we've been able to play an active role in what has now become a consortium. There was an initial visit to Russia and Bryansk last fall in November, in which representatives from the government, from the National Bone Marrow Program, the Hutchinson Research Center, and from the Texas Medical Center visited colleagues there, and this is a follow-up of that meeting. As you've heard, it's a combination of plenary lectures by some of the most eminent authorities in the world in the area of low-dose radiation. It's a mixture of that along with in-depth discussions and planning meetings, which we hope will lead to the formulation of a plan by which a registry can be formed to identify the individuals who should be followed up in the United States and in Israel. I might mention that there are over 1,000 individuals in Houston who have immigrated from the Soviet Union who would be appropriate to be followed up in this study. So we're delighted to play a role in it. This hospital has been a generous supporter. All of the institutions of the Texas Medical Center have been involved, including the VA, the University of Texas, and the other institutions. And we're really honored to have such a distinguished group representing this important area to come here. It's very infrequent that a group of scientists and clinicians can address a problem that is of such huge potential magnitude to the whole human race, and at the same time one can see almost on a weekly or a monthly basis direct effects in terms of the follow-up of medical care and attention to the children and survivors of Chernobyl. So we see this as a win-win situation for everyone involved in it, and I particularly want to thank Admiral Zumwalt for all that he's done to make this symposium possible. I'd be happy to try to answer any questions you hear me.
Dr. Gatto, even though the accident happened in Chernobyl, when I viewed those films this morning, the devastation was so terrible to the victims, and we live in an area with nuclear power too, so nobody is safe anywhere as long as there is a radiation threat.
Well, that's one of the outcomes of this, is not only to... there have been other forums for dealing with the effects of acute radiation, high-level exposure. There have been organizations that have been working for many years to promote the use or declined use and control of proliferation of nuclear weapons. But going back to Hiroshima there, are very few data about the long-term effects of low-dose radiation exposure, and that is a particular case. We don't know how much of a danger there is from nuclear power plants, and that's one. We know when there's an explosion that there are going to be bad consequences, but we don't know what is the long-term danger of so-called low-dose radiation exposure, whether it's more dangerous to have to be exposed to a low dose at one time or to a cumulative quantities of low dose, which would add up to the same amount over a period of time. And unfortunately, there are accidents such as Chernobyl. There also, in science, was an extensive discussion about the exposure in eastern Germany of the uranium mines, which Stalin set up there in order to develop an atom bomb after the end of the war. And there are a great deal of data that can be accumulated and lessons to be learned from that area. But what the main purpose of this meeting and of this symposium is to focus on the low-dose radiation question, which is one of great importance to mankind, but one about which we have a surprisingly paucity of data and information.
Is there a reason for this paucity? I'm not suggesting a conspiracy theory, but government and industry have a lot to lose by having this data out, or potentially have something to lose. Do you have any conspiracy theories? Do you feel like it's not out there simply because we're lazy or because we're afraid to know?
Well, I've always been taught to hand off the tough questions, so...
Okay. The first, you know, just a quick summary of the possible threats. The United States Navy is operating 100 nuclear reactors. Thanks to the benevolent tyranny of Admiral Rickover, we have never had even a low-level radiation problem. Because of the excessive safety standards, not the excessive, but the very meticulous safety standards that he always insisted upon. Other nuclear reactors in the commercial field have not been nearly so carefully designed. Three Mile Island was one example. The Chernobyl number 3 reactor, of which there are 19 of similar design operating today, is an example of the area in which it has not been adequately made safe. There are thousands of warheads here and in the former Soviet Union that are a potential hazard. Interestingly enough, those are probably the safest at the present time, given the state of relations between the former superpowers. The former weapons are very dangerous. We lost 2 nuclear submarines whose reactors are submerged in various parts of the oceans. The Soviet Union has had 4 at least. There are a number of other reactors that have been disposed of in the very narrow bays of Novaya Zemlya by the former Soviet Union. They have told us that there are at least 17,000 barrels of radioactive waste that have been sunk in the waters off Novaya Zemlya. We have had leakage of our nuclear wastes in this country. Recently, a deficit-minded person crashed a truck through a gate around one of our fence around one of our nuclear reactors, and spent 4 hours before he was detected. Had he been of a terrorist group, you could have had a nuclear reactor exploded there. So there are very real threats. One of the hopes that I have is that out of the lessons that are learned when we complete the work of this consortium, there will come renewed recognition of the importance of dealing with those threats and having adequate safeguards for any future weapons. One of the former weapons, the Soviet submarine that sank 310 miles off of Norway in 4,500 feet of water, has nuclear torpedoes with plutonium in it. Plutonium has a half-life of, 20,000 years, so that we've got serious problems around the globe.
How much, for lack of a better word, how much clout do you realistically see that this information will have on government, industry, and the American public? Americans are so used to hearing health scares every day in the media. I mean, will they listen?
Well, as I see it, the work of this group, which will be scientifically oriented and will not seek to be in any way propagandistic, will in its final analysis help the scientific community to disseminate in a thoughtful way how much risk there is and where that risk is and how to deal with it. So I think it'll have a very therapeutic effect. But inevitably, as that information begins to diffuse into politicians, some of whom are capable of thinking, it will have an impact on the safeguards and on the precautions that we take in the future.
Dr. Cal, I think we have time for just one more question.
Do we have one more question?
Sharon, you had asked Dr. Day a question, and I didn't hear the answer. I think someone else walked in. Do you remember earlier?
I asked a question of Dr. Guy.
No, Dr. Day.
No one asked me.
But let me answer a question that just so we're clear about one point, and that is low-level radiation and the reason it's so difficult to observe it. The danger of radiation is to the genetic material, the DNA, the cause of mutations. Now, on the one hand, a certain number of mutations, of course, have been very important in evolution. It's given rise to diversity in various species, which is selected for or against, and that's how we've evolved. On the other hand, mutation is a random process. It's not directed, as far as we know. And so one can estimate the majority of mutations are going to be deleterious. They're going to be harmful. At high doses of radiation, that's above 100 rad, the opportunity to observe effect, Dr. Broviev defined low level as that which does not produce a clinical effect. In other words, you can't observe a disease in a person directly related to that exposure, acute exposure. You can observe change at these high levels. And most of the survivors from Hiroshima and Nagasaki were exposed at relatively high levels, acute blast, very short-lived, very quick radiation exposure. And what we're dealing with here are much lower levels of radiation given over a period of time, because these fallout clouds dropped over a period of time and that recycled the soil and so forth. So you need large numbers of people to observe, and you also need some kind of a marker as to what's happened. You're not going to see the diseases necessarily right away. And the question is, as you go down on that scale of exposure to radiation, is there a threshold? Is there a point at which the radiation is not doing any damage? That's always been the big argument. And it can't be answered very easily because the numbers become so large in any experimental system, when you get down to those low levels, they go up by log, you know, by tens and by hundreds as you drop just a small unit of radiation down. So a population of this magnitude, which is in the millions, that's had exposure, would be very interesting to study over a period of time. Now, there are those who firmly believe, based upon reasonable scientific evidence, there will be an increase in cancer, probably in some degenerative diseases in that population, regardless of how low that radiation exposure above the background Dr. Roviov again described, where exposed to 5 to 10 rads on that order from medical and cosmic rays and so forth. So even a little increment above that will give rise to a certain amount of disease.
Yet, of course, as you go higher in the exposure, the more disease you'll see, compared to the argument that there is a threshold. If you drop below the threshold, the excess radiation isn't going to affect you. And there's no way really to answer that other than to set up the kind of study where you observe a large number of people over time. It has direct benefit to the individuals who are exposed because one can give them an element of their own risk. You can assess how much risk an individual may have had, and they would be the people, and as was described for the studies in Ukraine, they're being observed over a period of time, they're being watched. The higher levels of exposure need more observation than the lower levels. So when something does appear, you can do something about it. And then finally, we've come through 20 years of a revolution in molecular biology that's been alluded to on several occasions. The opportunities, even just storing cells, just getting some DNA and storing it, the opportunities in the future for being able to figure out these effects of radiation will be much greater than the really crude techniques that we have today, which in turn will have benefit to those people exposed, because if you see a particular mutation in an oncogene or something of this sort, you say you're at a very high risk of getting this disease, we'll watch you closely and treat you. So that's just a quick run through of the problem of studying low-level radiation.